Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.
Okay, we gotta call someone. This ain't right.
Call someone? Like who? Who do we know? We're just little people.
Do you think that...
Yeah. They're gonna try to deport her first and then come and get us.
No, no, they won't. We'll move. We'll go underground.
No. Felix, we're gonna get loud.
Welcome to Radio Ambulante Unscripted, a new way to listen to Latin America, part of Soundworks from PRI. I'm Daniel Alarcón. That clip you just heard is from In and Out of Shadows, a new musical about the lives and experiences of a group of undocumented teens. The script was written by acclaimed poet and essayist Gary Soto, and a lot of the text came from the transcripts of interviews, an oral history of what it means to be part of the society and hiding at the same time. So I'm recording on Thursday, November 20th, and by the time you hear this, President Obama will have announced his plan for executive action on immigration reform here in the U.S. We already know the broad strokes of what's being proposed. Now, what makes a play like In and Out of Shadows so important, I think, is that we have front and center the voices of those who've been living this drama. For many of the actors, these are not abstract questions of policy. These are just their lives. Actors like Homero Rosas, who plays Juan, a boy who arrived in the U.S. when he was 13, alone, crawling through a sewer to get across the border. This week, I sat down with Homero, Emily Cleon, the producer and co-composer of the music of In and Out of Shadows, and Gary Soto, the playwright. Theater is not exactly Gary's territory, as he readily admits, but Emily reached out to him and finally convinced him to do it. Here's Emily talking more about that process, including Homero's role in the creation of In and Out of Shadows.
It was actually Homero that inspired In and Out of Shadows, because I'd known Homero for a couple years and was able to get him a really good internship, a paid internship, to work with me at the Marsh. But the night before the internship was to start, he called me and said, "You know, I don't have a social security number, so they're asking me for one, so I don't think I can do it." And I said, "You don't have one, or you can't get one?" And he said, "I can't get one." And so we had to turn down this very good opportunity. And from that moment, I started to unfold the layers of Homero's challenges, as well as then several other of the students. And so then I said to Gary, "Come on, we need to write a play about this." Gary said to me, "Listen, I don't want to be the voice of the undocumented.
Right.
That makes me very concerned, and I don't want to be their spokesperson." So I said to him, "How about if we ask the undocumented themselves and we interview a bunch of kids, a bunch of teenagers, yeah, and let them be the voice, and then it will have some, you know, real truth to it."
And Homero, you were a part of that process.
Yeah, I was. We started off with, like, interviews, and I was even part of, like, one of the interviews, which was really, I don't know, it was a very interesting process, being on both sides of, you know, the coin and stuff.
So you did interviews, and you were interviewed?
Yeah.
Both?
Yeah, a good friend of mine interviewed me, which might have been, like, the reason why I was a little bit more open to the idea, a little bit more, you know, open. And even in the interview, I was very, like, conservative with, like, my stories. I didn't really share, like, the most crucial, most dramatic, most, like, difficult challenges that I had to face.
Why not?
Mainly because, I mean, I was 17 at the time, and it was just, like, I was starting to come out for the first time out of, like, the In and Out of Shadows, no pun intended.
Mm-hmm.
It was just difficult for me. I never talked to my parents about it. I never talked to my friends about it. And when I tried talking to my friends about it, they all had papers. So I just felt extremely isolated.
Yeah, it seems that this is an interesting way to put the story together, because you have this kind of polyphonic chorus of voices, you know? And I want to ask you, Homero, and then I want to ask you, Gary, about putting it together. The character you're playing is not yourself.
No, but, I mean, as most actors, like, it's, you always carry a little bit of that character into you.
So that's precisely what I wanted to ask you. What of yourself are you bringing to the character of Juan?
Well, man, I'm bringing a lot of his charisma, a lot of his energetic, very boyish charm. He's very, 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 like, I wouldn't say immature, just very, maybe a little bit childish, a little bit. He knows what type of situation he's in with, like, the whole being undocumented and being part of, like, the AB 540 and all. But he also knows there's more to life than just being undocumented. He knows there's fun, there's friends, there's learning how to skateboard, there's, like, going to the conference meeting. And, you know, he's a very, very optimistic guy.
And that feels true to your experience.
Yeah. I mean, at first I wasn't like Quantu, but, you know, the more, like, I started getting to the character, the more I realized that I find myself as a very charismatic, funny guy, like that people like being around and having a lot of fun, being crazy, being silly and all, but still being like very into school and being like motivated and totally responsible sometimes. and just like...
totally sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
So Gary, when you were putting together these voices, reading them, you know, reading those 200 pages of transcripts, what was going through your head? Like, how did... was it an issue that you'd really thought a lot about before this?
I think there, again, to reiterate, I'm not a playwright. I know I've written two other plays, both published, both selling extremely well in the school districts. But, you know, going to a play form and where, the main vehicle is, of course, dialogue. You know, mm-hmm. that has to move the narrative. And most of my fiction actually lacks dialogue. It's a lot of strong, I would say, description and some storytelling that moves the description. But dialogue is just something that was really very difficult to do. But I got into it after a while. Yeah. I really got into it.
How much did you massage the text? Or then how much of it is verbatim? And how much of it is collation or collage?
I would say it's a good portion of it's collage. You can read the stories. You get... again, we have how many stories, interviews?
I think we interviewed about 40 kids.
Yeah, 40. Yeah. So you can't possibly, with 40 kids being interviewed, not all their stories are going to be told. Mm. And one of the dilemmas for me was, ethnically, how am I going to break this up?
That's a really good point, because I think in the contemporary discourse, when we say undocumented and we say dreamers, you know, the average American, to the extent that the average American even thinks about this issue, they're thinking young Latino.
Mm. That's true. Mm.
But the reality is much more complicated. No?
That was really important for us. We really wanted to show the range of undocumented kids. Of course, Gary is writes beautifully in Spanglish. That's kind of his hallmark as a writer. So that's his natural fallback. But he talked to the... Filipino kids and kind of getting the Tagalog rhythm and what we wanted to get, because we have a main character that's from the Philippines, a family from the Philippines, and then there's a lot of Latinos in it, but then there are some other characters mm-hmm. as well, and a Chinese girl as well. Mm-hmm. But what we did is we interviewed the kids individually, kids like Omero and just the teen troupe I was working with interviewed individual kids, and then Gary came out and did a group interview. So in that case, we interviewed the AB 540 Club of Leadership High School in Richmond.
Can you explain what AB 540 is? Because some of our listeners won't know.
AB 540 is the assembly, AB stands for Assembly Bill, mm-hmm. and 540, I guess, was the number of the bill. That basically said that students who are undocumented in California had the right to apply to colleges and be charged in-state tuition. Before, they were being treated as foreign students and they had to pay out-of-state tuition.
And if I understand correctly, organizing around AB 540 is sort of the narrative through line for the play.
That's correct. So. They're on their way to an AB 540 mm-hmm. conference,
right.
Of which there are many.
Many, right.
So previous to AB 540, you couldn't even apply to for financial aid because you couldn't fill out the FAFSA because you didn't have a Social Security number.
Sure.
That is no longer true, right. Fortunately, because of the California Dream Act, and now there's a federal Dream Act.
Right. Can we talk about the production itself and the music? And maybe Emily, you would be the person to ask about that. First of all, how important was it that it be not just a play but a musical? And then how did you go about integrating the music into Gary's text?
Well, that was really a pleasurable experience. I'm a composer of musical theater, and when I think theater, I think musical theater. So I just knew it would enrich it, because music can sometimes carry the emotion, the dialogue can't. And I thought that would also be an aid to Gary's dialogue, to carry kind of the emotional messages in the music. But Gary, basically, I said to him, give me the title of the song and then give me a poem about the song. Hmm. And so, for example, there's a lovely scene of a young girl who's 14 and she is being sent ahead by herself, as many undocumented kids are being sent without their parents. And she sings a song about just being 14.
I'm just 14. Of race.
So Gary wrote me a poem about being just 14, and then I was able to piece it together and pull some stuff out. Sometimes we went directly verbatim from his poetry. Sometimes it was, you know, I had to do some rhyming, or I had to, you know, pull in some stuff or add a few lines. But it was really a pleasure working with his language. It was wonderful.
What kind of responses have you got from the performances you had here in San Francisco?
Well, they've all been positive so far. I mean, it's like I remember, like, after the show, like, a few, like, people at school that I go to now, or like people in the streets, they'd be like, oh, I saw you in that one play about undocumented students. You were really good. And like, that, like, inspired me to, like, go up and search up on, like, what is AB 540? How can I help? Like, what are these kids' struggles? What is, like, going on? Like, why is this not talked about? And that just made me feel like, oh my God, I'm like semi-famous. It's pretty fun.
Semi-famous is always good.
Yeah. That's great. It's a good title for something, too.
Yeah. Semi-famous. It's my next book, Semi-Famous. Autobiography.
Yeah.
If you don't mind, I want to just bring up one thing. At one of the plays last year at the Marsh, we did have someone who came and was very disappointed in the piece, in that it wasn't more strongly political.
Right.
It is really a portrait of teenagers. It's not, you know, a petition to the, you know, the U.S. Congress. It really is about teenagers. And it was hard. It was hard for the kids to get the feedback. But if you don't mind me saying so, Omero, you know, Omero called me that night at midnight and said, you know, tomorrow I want to tell the cast the whole story. And there's another actor in the show named Adan, and he said, so do I. So the next day, the cast gathered, and Adan and Omero told the whole story of them from the very beginning to here. And that's when, I mean, I knew it was tough, and I've known Omero for many years, but I really was shocked at what he had had to endure as a very young boy, and how he carried those scars with him, and how courageous it was for them to get up on stage and tell the stories of being undocumented when it's not very far away from their experience, and keep it together and not start crying. And, you know, it can't be easy. So
And just show that poise. Do you want anything?
Yeah, it was, just to go on with what she said, it was total tear fest. Like, we were all crying. We were all hugging each other. Then more people, like talked about, like, even just not even like just undocumented, like, related, like, subjects. Some people talked about bullying, some people talked about, like, it was just an emotional, like, pool. Like, it was crazy. And yeah, like, I mean, my story was just telling them how I came here, like, what things had happened to me, like, when I was six, from Michoacan to Mexicali, where I would cross. Me and my mom and my sister, we all got robbed and, like, mugged on a bus along with, like, 30 other people, and a guy with, like, a handgun and, like, bandana. And it's just, like, troubling. Like, I just, like, every time I, like, even think about it now, I'm, like, courageous, and I like, don't cry anymore, but it's still, like, super haunting. And I've had, like, psychological, like, just, like, haunting, like, dreams and, like, scars all over.
You just did this thing that I was just been thinking about, how in Mexico, coraje, it means two things, you know. It means bravery and it means anger.
Yeah.
And you just did it in English. You said, I got courageous. And I was wondering, did you mean that you got courageous in the sense of, like, I showed courage? Or do you mean I got courageous in that I get mad?
I mean, it was a little bit of both, I would say. I got courageous in the sense that I was no longer afraid to tell people, like, this is me. And I was mad because, also, I was mad at myself for not saying this sooner, for not being able to trust people a lot sooner. And that's what I think, like, most undocumented students that, like, have gone through really, really tough experiences, like, are afraid of and mad at themselves for, like, or maybe they're, like, drowning out in, like, their own, like, social, like, groups where, like, they can't really tell people, you know, and they really need, like, this, like, sort of, like, group, like, cast where everybody is, like, super supportive.
How did the play change after that night?
Oh, it got so much better. Like, people were a lot more motivated. Like, the songs were better. Like, the acting got super better. And it was just, like, we just changed, like, overnight. It was crazy. Yeah.
Did you notice it? Did you see the play before and after that?
Oh, yes. I saw every one of them. Well, actually, I think I missed one. But,
number
you know,
one
of the things, though, with In and Out of Shadows is a magnet for criticism. You know, people will praise it and they'll feel it, but there's always going to be that one person with some complaint. You know, people will have an agenda, and you can't satisfy everyone. But I could tell you, there was just, I like that phrase, tear fest. You know, after a lot of performances with people with wet eyes.
Yeah.
So something good was happening.
So that brings up something that I think about a lot, and that I'm sure you do, and probably everyone mm-hmm. around this table does, which is the idea of art and politics, and how much, one can infect the other, and how much, you know, what do you have more allegiance to? Where's your loyalty lie? And it seems like in this scene where someone stands up and starts questioning, you know, the actors directly, but indirectly the playwright and the producer as well, they're asking you, where do your allegiances lie? Which mm-hmm. I think is a very complicated thing to ask an artist, and kind of an unfair thing to ask an artist.
It is an unfair, because I think the artistry of language is supersedes every political agenda out there. And that has always been my motive, is to write as well as possible, you know, taking characters, taking stories. And the politics are going to be there, but this underneath the surface of all this movement of characters and narrative.
So I want to riff a little bit on that, Omero. You're starting your acting career, and presumably mm-hmm. this is a passion of yours, something you want to do.
Yeah.
And I presume you don't always want to play undocumented characters. You don't always want to play like the Latino kid doing.
Never ever want to be typecasted. Yeah. That's for sure. Always keeping that range. But I mean, like, I've played like I've been with like Emily and the old theater she used to work for, Marchi Theater, for like 5 years doing youth theater, like, and you know, I played a good like amount of different characters. I like the comic relief, but I definitely like want to like move out of that like sooner than later.
What is it that being on stage has given you that you never would have imagined before?
You know, like, that is rude. I don't know. It's such an easy question, and it's such a hard question, because it's hard to answer it with like a perfect answer. I don't know. There's just a sense that you get from like the audience, where like you take everybody's focus, everybody's energy, and you put it on yourself, and you put yourself in mirrors where everybody can see you. You can't hide on stage. The lights are on you. You have tons of makeup on. You have a different costume. You're playing yourself, but you're not playing who you are. Like, it's such an amazing feeling. It's almost I don't know if this sounds good or not, but it's like sort of like the X Factor, where like people can't really explain what it is that makes them right. so special or so talented or gives them the courage to go up on stage.
Gary, I want to end with you and ask you from the playwright's perspective, seeing the words that you put together now on stage and in the performed by these young actors. How has the text surprised you? What are they giving back to you that you didn't realize was even in there?
Oh, holy moly. God, what a question.
Take your time.
Take my time. You know, after, you know, we had, you know, it was many, many months working on the play turned musical. And I was really happy to see the youth on stage, the music, the dance, the lighting, all the energy that was given out. I'm still in awe. I went to rehearsal last Saturday, and I just always amazed how much energy youth have. Of course, I would like to borrow some of that energy. Just that the commitment is what I take away. And I think it's a pretty good musical, but I'm thinking, God, they're devoting themselves to this writing. I think, I hope I don't come out like a fraud here. I mean, I worked hard on it, but
no,
they're really taking it seriously. And you know, the last rehearsal, and I was walking away because I'm really kind of shy actually. And then they're going, bye Gary, and I could hear some voices, bye Gary. And I go, bye youth, bye. So I think it's not, you know, I just feel like I'm privileged to write the story to begin with, and then for them to memorize the lines and to fall into those characters. Again, it's the best in my life.
Omero Rosas is an actor and is currently studying theater in San Francisco. Gary Soto is a poet, essayist, and novelist, one-time finalist for the National Book Award. And Emily Kleon is the director of the San Francisco Youth Theater. You can catch In and Out of Shadows at the Brava Theater in San Francisco on November 23rd and at Fresno City College on December 6th and 7th. We posted a link to the website where you can buy tickets. This interview was produced by Silvia Viñas. Special thanks to Diana Buendía and Claire Mullen. The Radio Ambulante team includes Martina Castro, Camila Segura, Luis Treyes, Constanza Gallardo, and David Pastor. Carolina Guerrero is our executive director. Radio Ambulante Unscripted is supported in part by PRI's New Voices Fund, bringing new perspectives and personalities to public media. Donors to the fund include Maureen and Michael Rutgers and the Sarah and Evan Williams Foundation. Radio Ambulante tells the stories of Latin America. To hear more, visit our website, radioambulante.org, where you can find stories in Spanish and much more in English as well. I'm Daniel Alarcón. Thanks for listening.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.